get started. Hi, everybody. I'm EG, and this is G, and we are members of Consensus working on the Impero project. Today we're here to talk to you about our Open Architecture Initiative. It's really great to be back here at the... It's really great to be back here at DEF CON. This place is always going to hold a special place in our hearts because we launched at DEF CON in Shanghai just over 3 years ago. And obviously the Ethereum ecosystem has seen a huge amount of growth in that amount of time. Our team has grown. Our architecture is pretty much unrecognizable now versus what we had 3 years ago. And that's really what this talk is about. We entered into this space because we saw the troubles that people were having with trying to enter Web3, explore what could be done with building smart contracts and building things on top of Ethereum. And we thought we could help with that. And one of the things that we want to do now is share our lessons learned over the last 3 years, talk about what worked for us, what didn't, and just continue to share our experiences and lessons learned going forward. And that's really what this Open Architecture Initiative is about. So, talking about single node architecture, is whenever we all got involved with Ethereum, involved with blockchain, you all start at the same place. You start running an Ethereum client, it connects to the network, and you start throwing some requests for data at it, whether that's give me this list of transactions, let's interact with this smart contract. You're interacting with a single node that's typically installed on your laptop. Maybe you start working in a co-working space with some people and you start just sharing this node because nobody wants to have all of that space taken up on their MacBook and you can't like upload or upgrade your hard drive. So what you end up having is the single node running on a single machine, and maybe the amount of requests that you're getting at it are starting to be slower than what you would expect them to be. Like latency starts to increase, and you end up trying to do traditional web scaling tactics, which starts with vertically scaling. So that just means throwing more server resources at it. But that only takes you so far. At some point, these server resources scale beyond what you might have access to with a single machine. And what we've seen is that developers end up building custom solutions around this, whether that's custom caching, custom APIs, a bunch of sort of like scaffolding architecture around this. And what we've seen is that there's now like this inequality of data between different development teams, depending on whether or not a specific team has prior expertise with like web scale, or if they have the amount of resources and time to put into this architecture. And so that's what we're trying to do, is share more information about what's worked for us. There are different types of user profiles that use Ethereum nodes. For the majority of users, if all you're doing is interacting with a smart contract, checking a token balance and sending a transaction, you're probably using a light client, or you can be using a light client, and that's perfectly sufficient. If you're a developer at a hackathon and you try to do something that was, you know, a relatively simple use case, you probably still be using a light client. It's only when you start trying to do slightly more complex things with that data, like looking at historical information on chain, that you start needing to run like a full node or a full archive node. And maybe at some point you turn that into a business that was more focused on blockchain analytics. And at that point, you need this node to be always online and available because maybe you built an API on top of it that your users are consuming. And all three of these types of user profiles are using the same underlying Ethereum client software. Ethereum clients were meant to be ubiquitous. Everybody was supposed to have access to the same software and be given the same opportunity to access this data. So whether you were in Geth or Parity or Pantheon, now Hyperledger Basic, all three of these user profiles here are running the same software, and it's not necessarily tailored towards their use case. So when you think about an Ethereum client as a monolithic piece of software, think about this as like a Web2 application. Like maybe this is like a Django app or maybe on Rails app or something like that. The way that people typically solve web scale was by looking at this thing as subsystems. So what are the subsystems of an Ethereum client? There's the query interface, which is your JSON RPC web server. There's the peer-to-peer connection to the network. There's the EVM that's actually able to process new blocks and transactions. And then chain data storage that actually stores that information locally. And then the transaction system that actually receives these transactions and propagates them out across the network. Talking about something like the chain data. So if you're running this on a single piece of hardware, how do you scale access to chain data past what a specific node has? For Geth, you're going to be using LevelDB. For Parity, it's going to be using RocksDB. By taking this and thinking about it not as this monolithic piece of software, but thinking about it as subsystems, we started to apply just traditional like web scaling to this, because we're not running this on just like a single Mac, but we're running this in the cloud. And so you start with vertically scaling. You put this on a server, it's maybe using 8 cores, 16 gigs of memory, and these are usually pretty proficient nodes. You can get to over 8,000 requests per second just running one server if you set it up and configure it correctly. And maybe you can get double what you started with for certain things if you just double the CPU or double the memory. But then beyond that, that's where people start running into issues. And so we have what we call our cloud plan architecture. So we conceptualize this as taking those subsystems and being able to optimize them independently. So you don't just say, this is level DB on a single instance. You say, this is the chain data. And if I want to be able to query this data more efficiently and retrieve this data more efficiently, I can build additional indexes of data. Maybe I take this and instead of putting it in LevelDB, I put it into Postgres, or I put it into DynamoDB or something like that that has like web scale behind it. And then you can index the data specifically tailored to your needs. And you can then do this with any other subsystem, turn it into a specialized microservice geared towards your application. All of these things start with having that reliable node connection, and that's how you can quickly provision a node. If you try something in an Ethereum client, it's much slower than it used to be. It used to be in 2016, you didn't need extra tooling. You could work sync a Parity node in minutes, and you could get a Geth node up in like an hour. But over time, that's grown in terms of duration as chain data has grown. And so the first thing that we tried was doing simple EBS snapshots. If you're familiar with Amazon Web Services, there's this concept of elastic block storage, which is the ability to snapshot periodic backups and quickly spin up new disk types that can be associated with a new server that you spin up. So instead of taking, say, 12 hours to sync a node, this thing can be up and online in like an hour. And so, additionally, these periodic snapshots gave us failure recovery. There were occasionally certain upgrades that corrupted chain data, and we had to find a way to quickly recover, otherwise our service would have been down. So that was one of the things that we started with. Lately, there's been a lot of improvements to sync times, where it's gone from 1.5 hours with Geth 1.8, down to 4 hours with Geth 1.9. These are this is test data from the Geth team. They did great work over the summer, and we're able to get these kinds of improvements specifically by optimizing I/O utilization. I/O utilization is really important because when we run these things, it uses a huge amount of IOPS, because blocking data in terms of being stored in key value stores and the way that the data is verified is very read and write heavy. So we actually use this type right here, the i3-4x large, which is it gives you 825,000 random read IOPS available. If you weren't using this and you were using EBS storage, you were going to be limited to a fraction of that, like 1/10 of that is what you would get. This only gets you to that 4 hour mark, and that's not fast enough if you need to quickly spin up a new node for another reason. And so we ended up combining this approach, combining periodic backups with being able to sync that directly to a new node when we spin it up. Thanks to my crypto team for sharing their implementation of this. They were the first ones to really try this out in production, and they shared their implementation here if anyone wants to check it out. But this now got us to the point where this source of truth node is what we call it. Syncs from scratch, is able to sync from scratch in however long it takes either a fast sync or an archive node to sync. then we have a Lambda function that fires off every hour to back up that data to an S3 bucket. We can generalize this to any cloud that offers a similar tool. And then lastly, if we need to spin up new capacity to upgrade the node, these nodes have a high throughput pipeline between S3 and EC2, and it's fully able to saturate that IOPS that's available to the server and get this node up in right now about 50 minutes from the time that we started to the time that it's ready. So once you have this reliable node, you can start building additional services on top of it to optimize your traffic. And it really needs to be tailored to the traffic patterns that you and your application and your business have. So G's going to walk you through the traffic patterns that we see.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
I categorized our traffic into three different types: near-head, archive, and pull. Near-head is any request that's within a couple hundred blocks behind head. Archive is requests that require prune data, and then pull is requests that do not require prune data. As you can see, the majority of traffic that we get is near-head. It's fairly consistent, whereas archive data can fluctuate anywhere between 26 to even less than 1%, depending on what our users are doing at that given point in time. So the first thing we did was we cached our near-head data using CDN. It worked really well, but it just came with certain limitations. For example, we could only cache get block by number and get block number. It also wasn't really scalable, so we made a decision to store our near-head data in a Redis DB, and it was much more scalable and also allowed us to store all of our near-head data. In addition to our near-head cache, we have a set of specialized microservices that either index or cache like specific types of data. The one I'm going to talk about today is our log indexer, which services our get logs request. The way that Ethereum clients retrieve log data from get fairly time consuming. It retrieves every log, compares it with a Bloom filter, then it retrieves the transaction results for the matched logs, and then again compares the generated logs with the filter. It works really great for a person that's just querying their own logs using their own node, but we get up to like 100 million get log requests a day, so when that happens, it overburdens our Ethereum nodes. It also increases response times for our users, so we actually index all our logs with incoming new blocks. One of the issues that you can run into when you do this is to correctly account for reorgs, or you might be servicing incorrect data. So the log indexer actually uses another microservice that we have, called Reorg Tracker. And Reorg Tracker gets fed in blocks. So here we have block 5 million. It outputs that data to a consumer, in which case is the log indexer. The log indexer then can push the events to its DB. We use MongoDB. It continues on with block 5 million and 1. Log indexer updates that information. And then when we get block 5 million and 2, Reorg Tracker then realizes that the parent hash of the current block does not match the block hash of the previous block that it received. So it actually emits a rollback event, which the log indexer then consumes to delete that information. And then when Reorg Tracker retrieves the correct block information, it can then make sure that it has the correct logs for block 5 million and 1. And then it just continues on with the incoming logs. It's fairly simple, and we use it right now to index logs, but it can actually be used to index any kind of data that's associated with block information. So this is a fairly simple view of how we handle our requests. The majority of the traffic that we get gets handled by our near-head cache layer, and then we have our set of indexers and caches that handle the more frequently called requests, and then whatever is left is then serviced by our Ethereum nodes. So those are some of the microservices that we use to help handle the large amount of traffic that we get, but we also have a set of internal tools that we use just to like help maintain our infrastructure. One of the recent microservices that we open sourced is KeyRouter. It maps like keys to a consistent set of nodes. It helps route specific kinds of traffic to a consistent data source. A member of our team, Andrew Petroff, created the VIP node, which is like a way to incentivize the use of light clients, but we actually use it to manage peering our nodes. If anybody's interested, go check it out, it's pretty cool. And also we have our node monitor that monitors the health of our nodes. It tracks like latest block number and then compares it with an external source like Etherscan to make sure that our nodes are near head. It also monitors like peer count, whether or not it's syncing, and that all helps to make sure that our Ethereum nodes are healthy for our users. And then I'm gonna hand it back to Eiji.
Yeah, so this is really just the start of our open architecture initiative. Having this source of truth infrastructure, having some like standard way of indexing is really just the start. Over the next few months, we're going to continue sharing more information about how we've optimized specific parts of like the Ethereum client subsystems. And that one of the things that we want to do is continue working with partners in the ecosystem to continue to improve this and share knowledge so that we can keep building better tooling together. And we always want to do it in a way that's open, collaborative, and standardized. We never wanted to put forth an API that was non-standard and sort of box people into just one provider, one specific service. And so the next thing coming for us is the tracing API. If you've ever tried running the tracing API available on your local node, that's something that we're going to be building on top of this. Well, we're already building on top of this, and will be available in the next couple of months. Outside of this, this architecture is generalized. It's not specific to Ethereum. It's definitely easy to support EVM-based chains using this. We're going to be adding multiple chains in the near future. So if you have any questions, we're going to be doing a Q&A session from 9 a.m. to noon tomorrow and at the consensus booth. Please stop by, ask us about just Infura, Infura Plus, this open architecture initiative, and just join me by in chat. We have these great DEF CON 5 limited edition hoodies available if you want to come and check it out. And a couple of members of our team are going to be in the back handing out some swag after this. We want to say hello to Tim and Andrew. And that's it. Thank you.